You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Financial Ineptitude presents Two Bulls in a China Shop. You can find our podcast at twobullsinachinashop.com or just search Two Bulls in a China Shop wherever you stream your podcasts.
Well, hello and welcome. Come one and come all. We are opening the doors to the China Shop today. So glad you're here. So glad you've joined us. We have an amazing month in review show for you today. I'm super excited. We're going to get George Papazov from Trade Pro Academy back in here later on in the show. But before then, we are joined by my esteemed cohort in crime, Kyle. How are you doing today, Kyle?
Doing all right. Had a little trouble at the door.
Yeah.
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 A little sticky.
Looks like some hooligans busted it up overnight.
Yeah,
but man, that's okay.
Smash the merchandise, not the shop.
Yeah, right?
We got to pay rent on that shit.
Yeah. God. Who's our landlord? Sue? Call Sue. Get her down here to fix the door.
Oh, God. Well, should we just jump right into it, Dan? Do we have any?
I think we should jump in and we should get the bad stuff out of the way first. The
bad stuff.
We lost a random on that bet. Yeah.
Oh, God damn it. Yes.
Ah. Yeah.
Did you order your book yet?
No, I'm going to go down to the bookstore so I can look at somebody in the eye as I purchase it.
Oh, I feel like that's how it should be. Okay, I'll do the same. Somebody needs to see that I'm a lonely old woman.
Right.
So how are we going to do this, Dad? Because you still owe us the book report from poor Margaret that I got to get published.
Oh, did we not finish that?
I don't think sent me the full report.
Oh, okay. I have the file. I really do. I really do have that. I'll send that. And maybe I'll post that on the Discord, too.
Yeah, put it on the Discord.
You know what I'm definitely going to do is get a selfie of myself buying the book. We haven't even unveiled the book. Maybe we already did on the previous
episode. We did. It was on Twitter.
50 Shades of Grey. Yeah. We've got I actually proposed something to Kyle that I think is going to be both fun, appropriate, and painful.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to, using the internet's rating system, we're going to pick the steamiest scenes, and we're going to either just straight take turns reading them, or I'm crossing my fingers for an audio reenactment.
Oh, we're like, you get to be, don't know, we get to each pick.
I don't care. You can cast me as the woman. I don't care.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
We can flip a coin for who gets to be the woman, and then I'll add in some sound effects.
I feel like we should alternate.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be multiple scenes. Okay, so we'll alternate. Oh, wow. This is getting out of hand. Why are we spitballing this to make it worse?
I don't know, but is this going to be its own episode? Because I don't know that I want to pollute our normal show with this.
Yeah, no, this is a bonus episode. We're not going to. Yeah, we're not going
to. So we're just going to do a whole episode dedicated to 50 Shades of Grey as a stock trading podcast. Okay.
50 Shades of Bull.
50 Shades of Shit. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it doesn't have to be a full hour. I mean, it's long. It's as long as it's going to be. Maybe it'll be 2 hours. I don't know. We haven't done it yet.
No, we haven't.
But we've got a month to make it good.
So we should pick a couple scenes to reenact that the internet calls the steamiest. But I think we should also pick a couple of our own because we do have to read the whole thing.
Oh, is that? I was trying to come up with a way to get myself out of reading the whole thing.
No, we have to read it. I'm sorry.
Okay. God, the things I started doing for this show.
I know.
The terrible things I'm reading. Oh, my goodness. There you have it, folks. Stay tuned. We'll be dropping a bonus episode you don't have to listen to, but if you want to have a few laughs at a couple of guys who lost a bet against themselves, we got you covered.
All right, let's move on. Who was our first guest? I think it was Chris Mamula.
Chris Mamula. Yes, the retirement king.
Retirement guru. Yes.
Yeah.
What'd you learn from that, Dan?
That I am not ready to retire.
Me too.
I'm psychologically ready to retire. Like, I have things I can fill my time with, but my account is not quite there.
I feel like I would have been better served talking to him maybe, you know, a month before we did.
Yeah, a month prior.
Before I quit my job. I was actually really surprised, though, to learn just how many people don't have an actual plan. It's just like, quit work and then what?
Yeah, it'll come to me. I'll think of something.
Like, no, you got to have something to fill that time. You're talking about, you know, at least 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
No, luckily I have stock trading, but and this podcast and everything else that we do.
I don't think video games and movies count, because take it from somebody who has spent 3 months in a mobile home in the rural Arizona doing whatever the fuck he felt like. You run out of movies and games. You get this weird, like, everything is boring effect. Like, you overdose on entertainment, and then nothing is fun. And then you're like, what if I climb this cliff? What if I hunt falcons with a bow and arrow? Yeah, you just start getting weird hobbies.
Did you ever actually catch one?
No, I didn't do any of those things. I didn't want to reveal what I really did that was crazy. So I came up with weird things off the top of my head.
You can only masturbate so many times.
The chafing, Kyle, the chafing. Yeah, I was really surprised to hear that from Chris Mamola. To be honest, I don't think I was his target audience. I have. Not only have I just personally read stuff on the issue, and I was informed as of a few years back, but I just recently, one of my courses for business administration was personal finance that and had a big long retirement section. So like a lot of what he's talking about, I'm like, yeah, I just had to do that for school about a year ago.
Right.
But he was a really nice guy. And certainly if anybody came up to me and was like, hey, you know anybody who can give me some tips on retirement? I'd be like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Chris Pamela, retirement guru. That guy's got you covered.
Just wish I was religious so I could have joined one of those health commune things.
Right. If you don't have any kids.
Yeah.
To worry about birth control, and you're already like at an age where you're not worrying about having any more kids.
It'd be perfect.
But well, unless you get like cirrhosis of the liver.
Do you think they turn a blind eye towards smoking pot?
Oh, probably depends on the denomination.
Probably depends on the church, huh?
Yeah. Because I've run into some like church religious leader type people that were like totally cool with pot, but we were raised in an environment of religious people that were not.
Right. Plus, I get the impression that they just want to be able to use whatever they can to deny paying whatever.
Well, it wouldn't be an insurance company if they didn't do that.
I know. It's just now you got a church making decisions for you instead of a capitalist. I'm not sure which is worse.
Edmund from D-Chained. Yeah, we had a really good time with that guy.
Yeah, he knew a lot. A lot more than I think most of the other crypto people that we've talked about or talked to. He seemed to be really tied into how like the actual, you know, the goings ons of today are affecting things now and how they're going to affect things in the future.
Yes.
Like my mind was. No, that's not the right word. I was very surprised to hear his thoughts on the effects of the China ban when China banned Bitcoin mining, kicked out all the miners from the country. Basically, what did he liken that to? What was the quote he used? It's like banning the manufacturing of floppy disks. And
Right. Yeah. No more. That'll make those floppy disks go away.
But that just makes the claims by Dorsey that Ethereum is not like the
is not going to be a pack leader.
Yeah. Yeah, that just makes that all the more insane.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we've been seeing it just in all the people that we've been talking to, and the more we've been learning about cryptos, how many of them are based on Ethereum as a whole.
Yeah. I actually ask them, like, oh, yeah, it's the Ethereum platform. Yeah, so I think the analogy of Ethereum being like the App Store really made a lot of sense in my head.
Yeah. And then he had mentioned that they're doing a big upgrade. Do you know if that happened yet?
No, I don't. I don't keep my ear to cryptos like I should.
It should be happening here really soon. I think he was earmarking that as a another catalyst that maybe might cause it to jump in price.
Yes. Yes. Which is always exciting. What's a Bitcoin at today?
Oh, it was around 40,000. It's trading around 40.
Still above 40?
I think so. I didn't see any alerts on my Coinbase.
38,403 as of
it did drop a little bit. The thing I was most excited to hear about, though, digital horse racing.
Have you been trying that out?
I think I'm going to put $500 into one of those accounts and try to breed my own horse. I just love the idea of this. And I think it's, I think it could take up enough time to where I could save some expenses.
What?
Not buying video games or TV series or something. Not just have horses that I can, you know, focus on reading about and training and researching the family lineage.
All right. Okay. So what we're really talking about is you found a fun new game that involves cryptocurrency and you could actually win money playing the game.
It's gambling. Let's be honest. It's gambling on horses, but you get to own your horse.
Is there skill in getting a horse up to racing capacity? Like how do you, gambling usually requires some input. So you're the horse, you're breeding them. Like, what's the skill?
Do we want to have a full conversation on this? Cause I can.
No, we don't. You're right. Let's move on. Oh yeah. Yeah. I gotta say as a crypto guest, Kyle privately, I don't think I've ever said this on the air. I recently came across a person who described themselves as a Bitcoin master.
Oh, and yeah, I think you shared that on the Discord.
Edmund from DeChained, I would absolutely give him that moniker. Like as a crypto master, like the guy, he knows all the different coins. He knows what makes them different, what they're doing. And he does run an educational service. So you want to deep dive into crypto. And you want a place, a person, and a resource that's going to explain all the stuff that you need and want to know. DeChained.com. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy was on the ball.
Yep. And his kid was awesome, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of a light week for guests, it seems like. I've been not having much luck with the scheduling department. I've reached out to a bunch of people and waiting to get some hits back, but.
Is it us, Kyle? You think it's us?
Well, some of it's me.
Oh, I meant like people don't want to be on our show because they listen to it and they're like, those guys?
I mean, that's quite possible.
Well, fuck them. We don't need them.
Yeah.
Well, oh, they're too good for us, eh?
We don't want them.
Everybody who didn't respond to an email from Kyle, fuck you!
Well, it probably doesn't help that the email is, you know, team inept at financial ineptitude. They might be a red flag for most of them.
Oh, like maybe they think maybe, it's spam.
Maybe we should have picked a better name for the company.
Yeah. Maybe we can just make an email that's team adept at financial ineptitude, and maybe they'll just ignore the ineptitude. They'll just read adeptitude.
I don't think so. I think we'd have to go like,
damn,
team professional at business.business.com.
Yeah. Hey, Kyle, let's run down the rules really quick.
All right. Yeah, let's do it real quick because George is supposed to be showing up here. Rule number one, always double check your orders. How'd you do?
Yes, I have been. Absolutely. It's a lot easier when you have a full week where you don't make any orders, but I didn't make.
Yes, fair enough.
I didn't make any errors of that nature this month.
I don't think I did either. I might have had a couple at the beginning of the month, but I've been doing a lot better at double checking that. I think we talked to George about that last time. He talked about reading it out loud and acting like the confirmation person, like working at the brokerage.
Right.
So I've been kind of doing some of that too. Like, okay, I'm going to buy this many calls at this strike for this expiration. It also helps slow you down too. Cause like, yeah,
I want to get a collar for your cat. I want to get a collar for your cat that says trade confirmation manager. You have to tell your cat.
It's nice that it slows you down when you do that too, because there's been at least one instance where I was like, what the fuck am I doing? I don't want this. And then I canceled and didn't actually execute the trade. Yeah. And I need more of that.
this is stupid. I'm making a stupid trade. No, don't do this. Don't. No, no.
Yep, exactly. All right. Rule number two, log all your trades.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I still don't. I'm still spotty on that.
I've been a little slack in the last week or so. I've been because I keep bouncing around between different computers, and the file gets saved on different ones.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go back and then re-enter everything like a day or two later. I need to figure out a workaround for that, because you lose a lot of it if you don't log it in the moment. You lose a bit.
Yeah,
you don't quite remember everything that was happening when you were doing it, why you made the move, what you're feeling at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I need to probably do a little more focusing on that. Hopefully cutting back on trades will help in that regards too.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. I learned that from my week of not trading. Like,
right.
I only, and what's weird is like, I almost paper traded Yum.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually remember like everything about it, because it was one of the like two almost paper trades I made. Yum and then the McDonald's.
Interesting. So by cutting back on it, you're able to recall with better clarity. You have more focus on those two.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because nothing else was going on. I mean, right. I'm always watching the ones that I'm holding. I've got some shares AMC and BlackBerry. I'm always watching those.
Right.
But as far as like trades that I wanted to make, like those were two big ones that I didn't.
Yeah. Let's move on.
Less is more.
Number three, no impulsive or bandwagon trades.
I did kind of bad.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the week that put me in timeout was a lot of like impulsive, like, oh, that momentum looks good. Sign me up. Buy.
Right.
I was trying to, instead of focusing on a narrow set, I was like spraying it wide, like more trades equals more profit. Yeah.
I think I've been trying to follow or try to make moves based on the BAM model too much. And I don't think that that's necessarily the best use of that model, not for swinging weekly options. So I think that's something that I'm going to have to cut this month, which I already did for, you know, this yesterday. But we'll talk about that in the next episode.
There you go.
But yeah, I think I need to work on that one a little bit myself, too.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, have or / follow an exit plan.
You know, I did really well with that until this past week. I guess it's technically I should talk about it in August, but since we're recording this the very beginning of August, I got into a target day trade that I did not have if it turns around and goes against me level of when I would get out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it turned around and went against me, and I still have it. I still have it. And it's just gonna turn in. Now, I made a very low risk trade. I was still a little gun shy this week.
Yeah.
And it's really the only real trade I've made. But watching it go against me like that, like, oh God. So I've really been just sitting back and watching what I already have.
I feel like I followed my exit plan really well, but only because I set everything up as all or nothing trades. I kept my position size to make them, except for one instance where I exceeded my max loss and I had to take a timeout for a couple days.
Yeah.
But that's also not a great exit plan.
No.
I'm going to talk a little more in depth when George gets here about that one.
Yes. Let's talk. Yes. Definitely.
Let's see. Number five, paper trade back test new strategies first.
I haven't really been applying any new strategies. I feel like that becomes less relevant the more we work the strategies we're doing.
That's a good point. Number six, don't fight momentum.
Yeah, my target trade.
Yep.
I'm not wrong. The market's wrong.
The AMC weekly calls.
Yeah.
All right, last one. Earnings calls are gambling, and we don't gamble.
I had those BMY, and I didn't buy it knowing it was earnings, but I held it through earnings, and then I didn't even sell in the spike after good earnings.
Oh. I waited to buy the BMY calls that I bought until after the earnings. I did the same thing with Johnson & Johnson. HZNP, I sold those out before their earnings because I didn't want to be holding them. That was part of the reason why I cut those. I feel like I've done a lot better with that after I got smoked by Pepsi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right?
After George told me that, yeah, you shouldn't.
That'll learn you.
After George gave me the level to say, here's where you cut your loss, and I promptly ignored it. Actually, I did cut my loss. I just kept one because I just thought I'd prove. So, yeah, I bought three contracts at $1.60 I sold two of them at 120 just to get out, and then I kept one as a what if that I got 12 cents on.
Hey.
So, yeah, George was right again.
That fucking trade pro motherfucker.
What the fuck?
Did you hear that?
Yeah. Sounded like somebody smashed something.
Oh, look, it's George. He smashed in through the window.
Silent approach is the best approach.
How are you doing today, George?
Doing good. Happy to be on the show again. Let me give you my intro, my 30-minute abbreviated one again. Okay. Thanks for having me again, guys. Appreciate it. I'm looking forward to what we're going to do today.
I am looking forward to it, too. Kyle,
yes.
I know you've got some itching, burning questions for George. I've been talking a lot through this whole intro section, so why don't you take a turn?
Have you really?
We just started.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, but when I edit this, I will edit what we record later to be first, and I'm actually assuming I will have just been talking for quite a while.
Actually, you're true probably visionary. Right. All right. So, main thing, looking back through, trying to analyze some of the results from the past week, I'm noticing throughout most of July that there's a pattern that's repeating, and that's I'm holding losers too long and I'm selling winners too fast is what it seems like. Like my wins aren't nearly as big as my losses are. And a lot of that is just me not being disciplined enough to take the stop losses. But I've also been position sizing everything as kind of like an all or nothing risk. And I think maybe I need to step away from that.
Yeah, that's great. Like, are you noticing some kind of recurring, like, is there a recurring theme? Like when you said pulling the stops, Kyle, like, I want to know a little bit more about that. Like, are you putting them in and then removing them before they get hit?
No. I'm never putting a stop in. I'm trying to size them to what my, like, if I make an options trade, I limit the total option position to be $200 to $300, no more than that, because that's the maximum risk that I'm allowed to take on a trade.
Okay.
Then what usually ends up happening is it'll, you know, run up for a little bit. I'll turn like maybe a 10 or 20 cent profit on the position as far as the contracts go. And then it'll just kind of fall off from there and then eventually end up worthless.
Yeah, yes.
I get in my head because it comes a point where, you know, it opens the next day and now suddenly the contract's worth, you know, 20, 30 cents. And, you know, I think to myself, like, I'd rather just, you know, let it ride and see what happens tomorrow rather than try to save $20.
Yeah. So you kind of go in and say, I'm going to convert this somewhat profitable trade, kind of like a lotto ticket, and whatever happens, happens type of deal, right? If I'm understanding correctly?
Actually, it sounds like they're all lotto type plays is what I've been doing the past month. Now that you put it into those words, that makes a whole lot more sense.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting situation. I deal with this too. Like, I know we're going to talk about futures in a little bit as well, a little bit more. But, you know, in the futures market, in terms of holding losers too long, like, I've actually had that problem today. So it's very timely that we discuss it. And, you know, it's like, to me, there's multiple reasons that kind of things happen. Number one, it's like, is there a strategy? And, you know, as traders, we got the option to follow the strategy or override it kind of thing. And I think having one is probably the most important thing. I have, as part of my plan, three exits that I usually take. So I'll enter into a trade and I'll scale out on thirds. So I'll usually put full size on at the level that's good. And then obviously honor the stop, never move it to increase risk. You can move it to decrease the risk of the position. But then I'll have like three targets. One of them is a hard target of 8 ticks. The other one is 16. And we'll talk about that in the futures portion of this. And then the third one is just like an optional runner. Like what I do instead of having a profit target is I'll run the stop if I catch a nice moving day. But it's also like dependent on the context of the day, right? If it's by the morning time, usually the first 30 minutes and the first hour for sure, that's the initial balance as it's called.
Okay.
And if you get a lot of movement, if the low of that period to the high, you know, on the ES, for example, or the SPY is, you know, $10 on the, or 10 points on the ES, which is about a dollar on the SPY, then it's going to probably be a high momentum day. So then I adjust my third runner to really go for a lot more profit. It's a slow day and the range is very tight. That third runner basically comes off pretty quick as well. So do you have a plan like that for your runners, Kyle?
Let me go back and look at my notes and see which, because I think that's the other problem I need to talk to you about too, is too many plans.
Right.
Yeah, overplanning is, you know, is almost as bad as underplanning sometimes.
It's not necessarily that. I think it's just too many strategies that I've been trying to trade. Trying to trade breakouts, trying to follow along with Vico's trade plan and try to learn how to do some of that. But those are day trades. And I got swing trades. Some of them are based on just trying to follow channels, like the top and bottom of a consolidation pattern. Just too much stuff in general, I think. And I think that's part of the problem.
Is each pattern or every type of, so let's say you day trade and then you're doing a channel trading strategy, are all of them using the same risk management? Or are they like adjusted? Just curious, because
all of them use the same. There's still the maximum loss. If I break that rule, that's something that I decided last month that if I break that and move a stop or take a bigger loss than I'm supposed to, then that's it for the week. I'm done. No more trades.
Yeah.
So I've been doing a good job of following that. But the problem is that I've been seeing is that when, like, I'll take a couple of all losses, you know, like all or nothing, like just turns to nothing. And then when I have a winner, then I'm so quick to just get out of it and just bank a profit that I'm looking at such a small profit compared to the two losses that in the long term, it's not going to be a winner.
Yeah, you need a high win rate. Like, that pushes your win rate requirement right. to just break even. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Well, like, hey, look, we're all just trying to find things that work for us, right? Like, for me, what I do is I have different trailing targets. So basically, for example, like, if you're going to trade a pattern like a double bottom, triple bottom, you know, chart pattern reversals, usually you're going to have to take a little more risk on the trade. And by that, I mean, in terms of time, right? They don't always just explode higher because a bottom takes time to form. So you can really have different risk management. When I say risk management, I mean you're risking the full size of the option, right? That's the beauty of the option.
Right, yes.
Well, you can have different profit targets, right? You can structure the target based on levels on the market. So this is one thing that, you know, following order flow helps me do is determine these really hard levels that if you do get to them, it's like a big resistance. So you want to get paid. So what I do is, on the runners, when I traded options in the past, I would actually set the levels on the candlesticks, on the price action. So the chart patterns are your entries, but then your candlestick formations are what get you out of the trade. So you basically hold until you get a reversal pattern. Like, I like the dark cloud cover, outside day, etc.
Okay.
Yeah, because like putting 20% is arbitrary, right? Like 20% on a stock like Moderna right now, on an option, it's not much.
Right.
And then something like, I don't know, Coca-Cola that barely moves. It's like, you know, they're not the same stock. So you almost got to create a scaling out plan for each one of the strategies. You're going to trade a channel. Is it like a high volatility stock? And the way to do that really is to just look at chart patterns, but then candlestick patterns as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at multiple time frames for those patterns?
Yeah. So, and it really depends on the strategy, right? On the holding period. But what I like to do is a top-down analysis. I like to go a week out. On a weekly chart, rather, so each bar is 1 week, and then map out the resistances. Like, to me, a resistance is a level where the price failed before, or a level where there's a lot of consolidation back and forth. Because what does a consolidation tell us? It just means a lot of trades are open, right?
Right.
And so, to me, those are the points. And so, let's say, I don't know, let's do an example for, let's say, BlackBerry. Just because I know somebody's going to be looking at, or has been looking at this stuff. So, like, BlackBerry here has got a nice little top from the early July, late June sequence, and that's kind of around these 116.57s. The top end of it, like the high tick, looks like about 117, right? 116.95. So, what you would do here is you would actually do the take profit slightly below the resistance. So, if it's 116.95, you know, you could profit target at 115.60, for example. That way you get out of the trade before the profit targets hit. The next level I would have here on BlackBerry, because there are some tops and rotations, is like 121.33. There's that big wick. I know it's kind of hard on a podcast to describe it. And then the last one would probably 124.13, and then you could leave a runner for the rest of it.
When you say 124, you're talking about 124?
Hold on. I am on the wrong one. I did BBY.
Okay.
I was like, whoa. George, you are far more optimistic than I believed.
It's $10. Okay, let's do that again.
Yes, so, okay.
All right.
So a nice little exit is like these prior tops here. So like 1070 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you know, this stock's kind of had, like, if you look at the behavior of the stock, it just looks like one shot up and then gets faded back down.
Right.
It isn't really very trendy, but I think there's another really good resistance around 1494, somewhere in there. You see where, like, the price failed and the drop started?
Yep.
So that could be, like, your ultimate runner. So the way I would do it, let's say I'm long BlackBerry now, I would say, what is my ultimate target here? Like, obviously, to the moon, right? But let's say ultimate target here is 1568, 1557, anywhere in there. You could even drop it a little bit more and then start to trickle down from there. If that's my ultimate, where would I like my, you know, other one-third exit? And then where would I like my first one-third? Mm-hmm. Then just put that on the chart and hold it until it gets there.
Are you using volume profile or just the price ticks when you're looking at those levels?
I love the volume profile. That's like one of my favorite studies. Market profile and time profile as well. It's the same thing, actually, time profile, market profile. But for a stock like this, they don't really look at it much because the volume is very low, right? On any given day, like BlackBerry's been trading about 9 million shares.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like that's low comparative to some of the bigger name stock. So it doesn't have as much potency for me on volume profile if there's not much volume, right? It makes sense because you're not really profiling much.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just absorbing.
Yeah, that was a lot. I mean, you're probably still stuck at the 114 thing, right? Like,
yeah.
I made it past that.
Tell me it's going to the moon, George. Tell me it's going to the moon. Don't give me this honest analysis bullshit.
To the moon.
That's a sound bite. You heard it, Kyle. You heard it. Sound bite.
Help me sleep at night because I'm really long.
Right.
That's what that sounds like. But right. On BlackBerry, look, I'm Canadian. This company is like right down the road from me. So if you want me to do some Intel spying for you, Dan, look through the windows and see what they're working on. Oh,
yes. I need... I'm going to send you a disguise. I'm going to need you to wear and go down to BlackBerry and infiltrate and get some data.
Is it just like a giant human-sized BlackBerry costume?
I don't know. I haven't found it yet, but I just love the idea. I was thinking fake mustache, maybe a janitor's costume.
I got the real mustache.
I like the giant BlackBerry costume, like a thing of grapes. Just a giant berry.
I'll tuck my hands and feet in and just roll into the head office. Yeah, oh, hey, right. Guys. Where's the CEO? I got to ask him some questions for Dan.
For Dan.
Also, ask him why he tried to buy my coyotes, too, bastard.
Why'd you try to buy his coyotes?
Yeah, that was way back.
Yeah, I remember he wanted that. That was kind of interestingly enough the beginning of the downfall. Like, you know, there was a lot of distraction there. Like, he's trying to buy an NHL team. Meanwhile, Apple is like out there just starting to eat share at the market. It's actually a really tragic story in Canada. Not as tragic as like a Nortel type of situation, but you know, there was a whole city that was built to be a tech hub in Canada, and like it was centered around BlackBerry. A lot of kids were going to college at Waterloo, which is BlackBerry headquarters was located, and they were banking on getting a job, etc. And they got smoked. Like, they just didn't keep up with the competition. I remember Apple started coming out with iPhones. I'm like scrolling this little plastic wheel. I'm like, this is ridiculous.
But I think they've done a pretty good job of pivoting away from, I don't know how this turned into a BlackBerry conversation, but like their software.
Dan is really long BlackBerry, so we got to justify.
I am too. as far as like a turnaround company, I really like it. It's the potential. Strike that. Like, they don't make phones anymore, but they still make a lot of the software.
Yeah, they got a lot of IP.
Yeah, a lot of it's being used by the U.S. government. Like, the cell phones that they use have to use like BlackBerry OSs because of the security concerns. And then I've been seeing a lot of the EVs. I've been signing deals with BlackBerry to use their systems for like the entertainment hookup stuff, like the in-car shit, I guess, you know, connects you to your Pandora and all that shit.
Yeah, they got great technology, man. Like, BlackBerry for sure.
Yeah, just not good phones.
Yeah, and you know, they had a chance. Like, I remember when they launched. Like, I had a lot of BlackBerry phones from like the Bold. You know, to the like the original Bold, the big blue one. I had the Storm. I had all kinds of BlackBerries. I still have some of them behind me here in the desk. But like, there was a chance for them to pivot. Remember when they launched their Android version, and then they had a chance. Like, it was Android based, but then there was also a secure aspect for your work email, mm-hmm. right? They still had the BIS.
Oh, I think I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. The BlackBerry Internet Service. They launched that like 3 years too late. If they'd done that early right. on and partnered, they would have killed it. I think BlackBerry could have been like an Apple.
Yep.
But, yeah. But anywho, like, you know, I don't want to make this a whole BlackBerry episode, but I like the technology side of it. I like the story. Dan, like, I think you're on the right side of it. And what I like the most is like the risk factor here isn't too big. Like you're pretty close to a low, I think below the $8 marker. So it'll probably sell off a little bit more, but you're buying it towards the low of a range and like yeah. the target. Yeah, I like it. It's, you know, Barack Obama used a BlackBerry as president.
Really?
Fun fact, yeah.
Fun fact.
For the whole term? Because I think in 2009, I was using BlackBerry at work.
I don't know if it's for the whole, but like, I know he swears by it. I don't know if he, you can't really use, like, I have contacts from BlackBerry Messenger I'm trying to find on like a new platform because I had some really good chats with them. And when I loaded BlackBerry, I actually bought another one, like, 3 months ago, fun fact, I wanted to disconnect and just have internet on the go, and nobody supports BlackBerry anymore in a headset. So
That's awesome.
But if you're on my BlackBerry Messenger, contact me, Georgia Trade Pro Academy. I really want to talk
to you. There you go. So what were we talking about?
You're talking about holding losers too long and taking profits too fast. So we side channel the BlackBerry, some of this analysis.
All right. Okay. So you had the comment of using the chart patterns or the candle patterns to try to help you pick your exit points. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Like your initial one, Kyle, and Dan, like your initial profit target, if you want to take a little bit off because you have profit and it'll put you at ease, like psychologically,
yeah, mm-hmm.
that's completely okay. Like peel some of the position off, get paid, put it in the bank. But then try to have your second and third or like your ultimate targets be chart based.
Right.
Because the entry was based on the chart. And if the exit isn't based on the chart, you're not trading what you see. You're trading what you feel more so.
Right. Mm-hmm. My old right. nemesis.
That F word, right?
Part of what I've been trying to do for this month is actually just simplify. I mean, we kind of touched on it a little bit when we first started talking about this. But I feel like I've been just trying to do too many different things, too many different strategies, too many different time frames.
Yeah.
So going through the month of August, I'm looking at maybe just focusing on like one specific chart pattern, I think is where I'm heading towards, and just getting good at trading that, like learning how to trade. Like, I think I'm looking at consolidation patterns is the one that I'm really liking, or maybe even a trend channel. Let's see if I had an example. Vale was one that I was looking at, VALE. Space is another one that's trading in a nice channel between like 28 and 33. Vale is trading between like 21 and 23. So I think if I yeah. can use my technical analysis to try to grab those entries at the bottoms, there's two entry points on like Vale. There's a good one at 21, and then there's another secondary one at like 20 that it could possibly run to, and then take profit at just under 23.
Yeah, on the long side, right?
Yeah. You're
looking to buy that. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm a big believer of simplifying things, you know, because I always fight this too. It's like if something works, and as humans, we just get excited, right? It's mm-hmm. like, it's sexy. I want more. Give me more. So you're like, look for different patterns. It's okay. It's like human nature. We're opportunistic animals, but we're not as opportunistic as we are afraid scientifically. But anyways, point I'm making is like, I kind of go through this as well. And I remember we're chatting in the pre-call here that I'm trying to simplify myself mm-hmm. because like, I think one of the things for me is just following socials a lot will, you know, number one, we got to do it for business. Number two, it's like you start to see these ideas that start to creep in your head. You sleep on it and next morning, like, yeah, I want to see what this guy is trading. Mm. And it's nice to get ideas from other places, but sometimes it can be a distraction. So choosing one pattern for a month is a fantastic way to go because we tend to think that the more we do something, the more return it'll have. Right, age-old conditioning. It's like just work hard and you'll make your own way, kind of thing. But
right.
I think this is a less is more business. I think the more you do, yes, you have more trades, but that doesn't mean more money. It means you're more distracted on each one, if anything.
Right,
right.
Yeah.
So
that's something actually we were just talking about on the last episode was simplifying things makes it easy to keep track of, easy to determine what's working, what's not working. And part of our problem, I think, is just wanting to be in trades too much.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense, right? It's like mm-hmm. when you trade as a profession, as a job, it's like being in the trade as the work is what we associate it with. But really, you got to remember that the analysis waiting around for the trade is just as important. If not, I argue it's more important than the actual trade, right? Like the monkey could do the trade, but you have to tell the monkey when to do it. So it's like, I think the real job is really the analysis. And then when it comes down to doing the trade, I think that's the easy part because it's so systematic, right? Mm-hmm. And when you simplify to one pattern for just a handful of stocks, you start to see the kind of the tendencies of that stock. You get to know it intricately rather than scanning for different opportunities. It's like new company, you know, you're learning not just the pattern, but how it moves, the volume, the news cycles around it. It just,
right.
It's a lot. So like looking at Vail, for example, Kyle here, I want to show you a cool example. Mm-hmm. Not only is it a good pickup here at the 21s, but what you could do here is do like a if or and statement. So if you look at 23, that's a big resistance.
Yeah.
Right. So what you could do, let's say you're long. And again, this is not advice, not recommendation right. or solicitation to purchase any securities, but like, but like, let's say you got the entry here, you know, target these 2253s. Let's say you get rid of 2/3 of your position, leave a third to try to break that resistance.
Yep. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. And you could even add on it, right? You could scale back in. So you kind of start out with a buying the range low trade idea, but then you scale up with momentum. Mm-hmm. And this is gold because you're adding to a winning position, not the losing ones.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, just like work it, you know, work the trades. It doesn't have to be one trade in and out. You could scale in and out multiples, put some risk on and like size in and out of a trade while still riding the trend until it reverses. Because what's the biggest question that we want to know when we're long a stock? It's like, when will it stop going up?
Right.
Right. We know it's going to come back down. So it's like, when is it going to stop going up? And I think by being in at the range low and then adding on the breakout, you have skin in the game to find that question out. Right. You'll learn it. It's like, okay, it feels risky. It's starting to turn. I'm getting some candle patterns around, like against my position. All right, I'm going to get out here. Rather than just seeing it without a position, you're not learning as much as being in it for the whole right. cycle of the up and down.
Yep.
All right.
I've had a lot of coffee. You asked me a good question.
That was a great response. I
yes, I love it.
Found much value in it. Thank you.
Dan, do you want to take a turn?
Yeah.
It sounded like a no, Dan.
When do like you think a little girl like me would start menstruating?
Oh, my God.
If it hasn't already happened, it probably won't, bro.
Curse you, God!
You're about 21 years too late to ask God that question.
Shit. Okay. Oh, sorry. That was the book I had to read. Shit, that had nothing to do with stocks. Yeah, one of my questions, if we can cycle back to BlackBerry Limited on the daily chart, not the weekly.
I told you 114. Isn't that enough, Dan?
Yeah, right. No, my question had to do with chart patterns, and that's actually why we made the segue to BlackBerry, but we never actually got to the thing that I wanted to talk about, which was a ill-fated tweet, because I like to tweet out when I see stuff almost as, you know, you like you said, social media engagement, and most of my followers are AMC apes. So I feel like pressure to tweet out not AMC stuff. Anyway,
right. Yeah.
So I just took a quick snap on my Ameritrade candle chart. So it's not like TradingView with volume profile or anything. And it was yesterday, and I saw that we're recording this on the 3rd. So I had the July 28th through August 2nd. It was four candles. It was a nice big green long period. And then I had three, followed by three descending red period candles, short period candles with descending volume.
Right.
And I thought, oh, this is a rising three.
Yeah.
This looks like it's going to set up a rising three. And I tweeted that, and a guy said that the July 30th bar fails the definition for a rising three period.
July 30th. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask if it's because of the gap between the bodies.
I got a controversial opinion about a pattern, right?
Okay.
What are we looking at when we look at a chart realistically? It's a whole bunch of humans. We're looking at a chart of psychology of the stock, right?
Yeah.
It's like, so I got a looser definition on these patterns. So if you go by the textbook, you know, the disqualification factor, I think, is the fact that it went more than halfway back of that bullish day, right? So it's like you're losing that momentum. Like, the idea here on the rising three is, like, if you walk through this pattern psychologically, I like to look at this as a bull and a bear, and I like to personify stuff, like fighting it out. Yeah. If you look at how these bars form in terms of, like, momentum in a fight, it paints a much bigger picture than just saying, oh, here's a chart pattern and I'm going to do it because. And then the guy that tweeted disqualifies it, sure, it's textbook. But look at AMC, look at GME, look at Bitcoin. That's not textbook. None of that's textbook. You know what I mean? Like, you ripped up that textbook and you burn it. So
right. Something's changed.
Exactly. So, like, you know, with these patterns, what you could do is, you know, hey, look, the traditional sense of this pattern has failed. But I like the idea behind the trade still, because it's still holding out on the support. Then you could now start to scale out. You could say, look, I don't like it as a full-size trade. I'll peel off a third of it. Because the risk has kind of increased a little bit, I'll take a little bit of position size off the table. But in terms of, like, what it says is a rising three pattern, you got to also look at the volume on the confirmation. And do you see how... So look at July 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th, or 27th on that pullback, the middle of the rising three. You notice how that volume was, like, super weak on the sell side? And then that big candle on July 28th that popped all the way up to, I don't know where to close, like 1078-ish.
Yep.
Yeah. That had some decent buying volume. So you're on the right side of the trend. Like, the bigger money is buying this level. Now you have here a hammer at the bottom. So, you know, just because the pattern failed doesn't mean the trade is going to fail. So you could kind of put something in the rules. Hey, if I'm going to be a pattern trader, what happens if it gets disqualified? Is it a hard disqualification? Is the trade still good? Is the level holding? Like, what is the volume saying? So I think there's more to it than just, you know, this day disqualifies a pattern, so screw your trade kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all I was going to mention. You know, the rising three is a good pattern. But look what it's kind of forming. It's almost trying to do a triple bottom here, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got to remember these patterns. Sometimes they look like one thing, you classify it. And then let's say a rising three turns into a triple bottom. 6 months from now, you're going to go back to the chart. You're not going to see it as a rising three. You're going to say, oh, that was a triple bottom the whole time. Right? So in hindsight, patterns always work. That's why we have a textbook on them. That's why you don't really learn how to trade from the textbook. Like, it's not, you know?
Right. Well, and continuing on the theme, then, so you would be, say, when you look at the BlackBerry on the weekly, and you look at the 19th July, 26th July, the lows are 966 and 964. Would you consider that a tweezer bottom on the weekly?
Nine. So this was...
They're 2 cents apart.
Yeah, I see them. Yeah, yeah. So what happened with BlackBerry the last couple weeks? Like, is this just price action downside? Is there a news event somewhere here? Because, sorry, I don't follow it as much.
I don't think there's any news. I think it's all just price action. Just
price action. Yeah.
You know, like, here's how I would play this. And now, like, remember, everyone's different. This is not advice or recommendation or solicitation to purchase any individual security.
But this is why we got you on the show, is to say this stuff. So continue. Yeah.
To tell us exactly what to do and when. Yeah. So,
But now, let me give you the recommendation.
Yeah.
So what I see on this pattern, you're seeing some, like, traditionally non-momentum candle. You know, you got, like, a doji there. You know, they just look at crosses. A cross means it went up a little bit, went down a little. Nobody really won. What I see on this is, like, a broader term trade opportunity, like, longer term. And I see the real support here is, like, 795. Mm-hmm. So, if you get into a trade and it's not going, or when I get into a trade and it's not going, I have no problem peeling off a position. And this is what we're going to talk about in the futures portion. I got no problem taking it off. Like, let's say you put in, I don't know, 10 contracts on the call side. Every single day it's not going. Hey, you know, I'll peel off 2 a day. So in 5 days, this thing hasn't gone my direction. Clearly, it might still go, but my timing is wrong. And with options, you have to get out if it's not going anywhere, because it not going anywhere is the worst thing for your options contract.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to burn out your theta. So the way I would look at this is, every single day that this has a lack of momentum, I'm like, yeah, maybe I'm not, I might be on the right side, but maybe the timing isn't right. So what I would do is peel it off here a little bit, take some sauce off and put a limit down at like 860. Sorry, yeah. 883, 880, maybe even down like 854. And then that way you could put a little bit more size on with a very tight stop. Because below that low of like 765, it's like,
yeah, it's ghost town.
Good night. Yeah. Yeah. Like, so that's what I would do. It's like, look, it's not going. Let me peel some off. Let me put some more limits down below. So instead of getting stopped out as it drops, now I'm actually getting into my trade and I'm picking it up at a lower cost base with a really tight stop, which means I could put even more on. Mm-hmm. Not calling you a moron, but more on.
too late.
That's oh, no. Yeah. I've definitely been called worse. Yeah. Yeah. Soundbite.
Yes. All right. So, yeah, that's kind of how I see the BlackBerry trade. It's like it's not going, but I don't think it's a bad trade because of support level. And it's worth a shot, you know. One thing you want to notice, though, is that run-up on January 25th that got us to like $28.74, whatever it is.
Yep.
I don't know what happened there. Look at the next high there that occurred on June 1st. It's like it's 20.10, right? So it is getting lower highs, but that's kind of coming right into a support. There's going to be a move. And I think this is a pretty good low-risk entry as long as it stays above 8.
Oh, yeah. All right, so I can take sleeping pills off my shopping list. Right, thank you.
And add Jack Daniels.
Add the Jack. It's party time.
Peanut butter whiskey for me. That's my new thing.
Oh, my God. You mix it with hot chocolate and marshmallows. It's stupid good candy. That's right, kids. Make alcohol that's, more like candy.
There's nothing better than a buzz and diabetes.
Yes. Oh, yeah. The best.
One thing I want to mention, though, before we move on to BlackBerry, if you need sleeping pills, Dan, I know it was a joke, but like if you actually feel like some anxiety around this, like it's got to go, that's probably a really big sign you might be over-leveraged on it. Just take some sauce off.
For sure. I'm not actually losing sleep over this. It's more that stupid promotion I took that's working me to the bone. That's what I'm losing sleep over. Like, God, why did I do this?
Why don't you be a good manager and just take it out on people and not your stock position?
Well, you just fire somebody.
Wait, I can take this out on my employees?
Didn't you just fire somebody?
Yeah, I fired him for credit card fraud.
There you go.
What? Why do you think Vicky is so monotonous? just kidding. I love that kid. Love you, Vicky.
You've teased it a couple times. Let's move on to the futures because I know that that's your preference, and I'd like to kind of get some insight into you and why you prefer them over something like stocks or options.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I started out trading currencies, FX, and then transitioned to options trading, and then really like did well with futures. I did good with options, but it really didn't click with me. Like I found the market for me was futures. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to one sentence. I like sleep. So like when I was trading options, you know, the feeling of waking up at 3 a.m, because I could talk about this for a long time, but I'll make it short. I was running an option strategy, which is basically like iron condors, and I was putting on like a lot of size. Mm-hmm. I was actually at the time looking for some funding from private equity group out in Norway. And they were very interested in what I was doing. They wanted to fund the venture. So I had like, you know, I had people watching me. I had to perform. So I was scaling up big. And I did like, 35% on decent capital within, it was like 8-9 weeks. So it was like really good return. I'm planning the cottage, you know, all that stuff. And then I got smoked. And I remember that in 2016, China devalued their currency and the market just absolutely just like dumped. And the strategy was prepared for downside, but not like that. Right. It took a lot of balls to keep doing the strategy. It would have worked eventually, but it's one thing to look at something on paper. It's another thing to live through it and execute it like you should. Right? So now I looked at that option market and I was like, man, like I used to wake up at 3 a.m. to check it because London markets would open up. You know, I wouldn't really get very restful sleep. I'd wake up in the morning. First thing I'd do would be like, let's see how much I'm up. If I was up a lot of money on the portfolio, I was excited, but I didn't feel like I really was in control of that. I just felt like, hey, I was sleeping. Like I didn't do anything. Right. And if I was down, I had a hard time explaining it. I'm like, I should have cut some of the position size off. So with futures, what I like, it's a long-winded way to say, I like that I'm in control of it. Like I'm in and then I trade it. And then when I close out my last trade and I'm done for the day, like Kim Jong-un could launch ballistic missiles and it wouldn't really impact anything because I'm all in cash. And you know, to me, that's like one of the biggest advantages is that I'm only in the trade when I'm at the computer. When I leave, it's like complete calm. I don't have to worry about anything. I disconnect and live my life. And I remember being on vacation with my family in the Bahamas for New Year's, and I was literally checking on my computer. Like, it was a bad week, so I kept trading and trading, and I was like, yay, I made back the weekly profit. It was Friday. I had to get on the plane. I barely went to the beach or did anything.
So,
like that, yeah, that really started to eat away at me and my personal life. And so futures was good. And then I also got introduced to order flow. Order flow being, imagine like being able to see every single order at a time. If a big institution puts on a position, you could see it. So you could piggyback trades. So that started to kind of get me excited about reducing risk. I'm like, I could pick a moment with high precision and low risk. And instead of waiting for a move in price, I could generate better returns scaling the size. Right? So let's say you're looking for a $20 move on a stock and that'll be a $1,000 profit. I could do $1,000 on 2 points in the ES, which happens like 100 times a day. So everything started to kind of come together, right? So I didn't really want to manage positions and be at the risk of overnight markets, given all the volatility that was happening at the time. I really like the fact that I could scale size and like some of these low float stocks, if you put an options order in, like people are going to see you. It's very apparent.
Right.
In futures, like, you know, no matter how big I trade, I'll get swallowed whole. It's a really big market. But I like that part of it. I like that I didn't have to nurse the trades. You know, there is a danger to all this too, though. It's high leverage.
Right.
So if you're emotional, if you find that, you know, being in front of the computer, if you get stressed out while you're in a trade and make bad decisions, it's not really your personality to deal with a problem as it happens. It could be tough. It could be tough to trade futures, but like that, those are the reasons that I got into it. Is like the leverage is good. The markets are 24/7, not 24/7, 24/5. They open Sunday at 6 and then close Friday at 5 p.m. Leverage is good. Commissions are cheap. And I just found my style to be more not holding things overnight.
How does the securities, how do they compare as far as movement to like say a stock or an option?
Like in terms of like number of points or like
the size, the volatility, the predictability of it. Like do patterns hold more true in futures than they do on a stock, or are they similar?
Yeah, so the futures markets are interesting because there's futures for equity indices and then there's futures for commodities. There's futures for everything, right? And the futures track the S&P 500. So like the ES futures that are the most liquid contract in the world. And the reason they're the most liquid is imagine being like a Cathie Woods, for example, or a big portfolio manager. You own 1,000 different stocks and all of a sudden the market starts dumping. There's no way you could get out of those stocks or take profit because everyone's selling. So what do? Institutions go in and short the futures market because it's got a one-to-one correlation to the S&P 500. So for that reason, like the hedging availability and the liquidity of the market, it's deep. It takes size. It's like a really, it's one of the most liquid markets in the world. You know, they're very correlated. The only difference between the futures and the S&P 500 index is they're a quarterly contract. So futures and the ES are listed quarterly. And at the beginning of the quarter, there's about a 10-point difference. The futures trade 10 points lower to the S&P. But as the quarter progresses to the last day of expiry, they kind of converge to be the same price. And that 10-point difference is the fact that the futures don't pay dividend.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, we got really complex there. But
yeah,
point is, it's one-to-one with the S&P. Like ES and S&P 500 is one-to-one. A rough approximation is one SPY contract or 10 SPY contracts is equivalent to roughly one ES futures contract.
Okay, so about 1,000 to 1 share wise, one share.
I like a 10 to 1, yeah.
10 to 1 like contract, 10, but a contract's worth 10 or 100 shares.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. If you do the notional, exactly.
Well, I'm sold. Sign me up. How do I do it?
Well, we got the courses, Dan.
I know. Yeah, Dan, I know. I'm just kidding.
Knowing you, Dan, and like your personality, the futures market is a really good place to get large outsized gains when there's like trending momentum. And you know, you don't have to hold it. I think like just knowing you, your personality, it would make sense to check it out. I'm not trying to convince you of anything, but
No, I am aimed in that direction. I just want to finish all the, you know, I'm doing them in the order, you know, the Trade Pro courses.
I got a great place you could learn it when you're ready.
Okay. Is it the Trade Pro Academy?
Yeah.
But, you know, it helps to get the motivation from your mouth to explaining the details to get me excited to be like, oh yeah, I really need to get to that spot because that futures does sound like where I would thrive.
Yeah, you know what's great about it too is like, let's say there's a news event. So this is what I really love about futures. I don't know, what's a recent news event that kind of spooked the market? Like inflation, right? Mm-hmm. Like inflation report comes out, it's super high, everyone's panicking again. And you wake up and that report comes out at 8:30. The market doesn't open for an hour. There's no liquidity if you want to get rid of your position. The first thing you're trying to wonder is, I got 400 stocks. Which one am I going to sell? Which one's exposed to inflation? All right, let me do a screener. You know, which one is getting hit the hardest? Okay, let me go put my limits. By the time you get out of your stock positions that are impacted by inflation, I've already closed out the futures trade at a profit, right? Mm-hmm. It's like there isn't really thinking. There's no like multiple steps. It's bad news for market, short futures. Great news for market, buy futures. And it gives you the ability to put trades on with very little lag or delay to economic events, news. And it's like the sentiment, once it changes, there's a potential to run a lot. Like it could go some days with a lot of momentum, you get 50, 60 points. I'll put that in perspective for you. Every point on the ES futures is $50. And that takes $500 margin. So you get 10 points, you're making $500, 100% return on your money with 500 margin for a 10-point move in the S&P 500.
Huh. Oh, wow. And you mean by 10 points, you mean of the actual like 40-some thousand dollar number?
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa.
Like, so let's see today. What did SPX do today? The S&P is, I mean, it had some volatility, but it's up about 04 to the 23. Let's call that 20 points. That's $1,000 right there for today. And it looks, look at it on the chart. It's like a tiny little bar.
Yeah. Okay, wow. So the leverage is just phenomenal.
It's really, really good. The only thing is, there's a saying in the industry, live by leverage, die by leverage, right? So It's like you have to make sure that if you're wrong, you don't stay long. It's like if you're wrong, you got to admit it and just get out. Like cutting risk becomes a job. It's like you'll get away with it an option sometimes. Like, yeah, I knew I should have trimmed here, but it's up a little bit next day. Right. In futures, like, because every point is $50, you really don't have a lot of margin of error, and especially to get emotional and start adding. Like, you could blow out an account extremely quick in futures if there's no plan and you're disciplined and you're using leverage as a tool, not like, I just want to YOLO in this, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I did a podcast today, and I came up with a phrase, YOLO will leave you solo. So,
hopefully alone with your money.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But is that the best thing in the world?
It depends. You're Scrooge McDuck.
It's true. Right. I mean, somebody likes it.
Okay. Well, I think we've covered most of the stuff that I wanted to ask, you know, a little bit of segues into some other fun stuff.
Awesome. Yeah.
I think my takeaway is a lot of it is discipline, is what it seems like.
Yeah. Honestly, Kyle, for you, like, I love that simplify the month idea. I think, like, you'll find a lot of success with it. If not in profit, at the very least, it'll be in confidence, and like things will seem to kind of settle in. Starts to feel more like a process, right? And The following month, you could build on that by starting to scale in. So I would, like, every time I'm trying to simplify things, if my theme of the month is simplify your trading, I'm not going for big profit. I'm going to simplify. I want to create repeatable, actionable processes. If I get that out of it, the following month is going to be beast mode, right?
Right. I like it. I like it a lot.
Simplify. Make trading simple again.
Right. Now that we're done with the podcast now, right, Kyle? Like,
well, we have something. There is something that needs to be addressed.
Oh?
And we were supposed to do that at the beginning of the episode, so George would have some time to think.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry.
When we joined George for his podcast and we were talking about our bet, it sounded like he was feeling a bit left out.
Yes, this was true. This is true.
So let's do it. We've decided that we might want to just challenge you to a little one. We had some ideas for consequences, and I'll give you some of the failed ones that we decided against. One of them was loser has to wear the other person's favorite hockey team's hat for a month.
A month? Wow, yeah. You're trying to get me beat up.
Yeah. So another one was loser would have to host a dinner party but could only serve craft dinner.
Yes. I love that one.
I love
you
that
guys are too. Invited.
Oh, yeah. I was just hoping Vicky would be there because I didn't remember how much he despised it.
You'd need like a truckload of craft dinner.
But I think the one we decided on is just a simple... whoever wins gets to introduce their podcast for the next month as the winner of the bet with, if you win, you'd be winner of the bet with two bowls in a China shop. If we win, it'd be over mind over markets. Loser has to introduce themselves as the loser of the bet. And there's no discussion allowed about it. Otherwise you can't clarify it. You can't explain it. You just have to go with it.
Wait, so the intro is just like, hey, welcome to Mind Over Markets. I lost a bet. And then just going to the topic.
Yep. Pretty much.
Cool. Down.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
No explanation. Especially like I'm thinking about having a guest on too, and just me being like, wait, what happened? Like, and then just ignoring him completely. Okay. Like
talking over them. Yeah.
I like it. The pressure's on. So what are we doing? Choosing a stock that we think is gonna outperform for the month?
That's kind of what I was thinking. Yeah. So we'll say the stock, you get the open price tomorrow and closing price at the end of the month, which would be which day here?
Tomorrow being August 4th for our people playing at home.
August 4th, and then the closing price on Tuesday the 31st.
Yeah, let's do it. So do I get a pick right now? I got one.
I was going to let you go first.
Okay, so because it's a bet, and this is like there's no money on the table, I don't get to bet often without being a risk manager. Here I can. Yeah, I'm going to have some fun with this. I'm going to go with the inverse ETF for the SPY. I'm going to bet on a pullback for that. So I think the whole market's going to take a bit of a beating.
That was my pick.
Well,
I was thinking not the SPY, though. I was thinking like the SQQs.
All right, nice. George, which one, though?
Yeah.
There's a few.
So do we get to do like leverage ones? Can I do like a triple
lever? Yeah. Yep. Like a triple leveraged. Those are my favorite.
Because I'm going to win big or lose big. So let's go for it. Dan's awake. what's the triple leverage SPY one? I know SPY is the single upside triple leverage.
I should look on my phone. I've got it on Ameritrade. I've got a watch list with all of them.
All of the
SPXS. Wait, no. SPXL, I believe. No, that's a bull. So the bear is SPXS. 3X shares, yeah. Well, that's my horse, guys.
That's your horse?
That's my pony.
Nice. I love it, George.
I do, too.
I do.
That was my backup one.
Kyle, we have to pick one together, because it's not a fair bet.
I know. Well, I figured it was going to be pretty obvious what we were going to pick.
BlackBerry?
Should we do BlackBerry? Should we try to beat George with the meme stock?
Well, what... It's the most fun. What are we going to do? The SQQQ? No, the NASDAQ's going to fall more, you son of a bitch. Ha!
Yeah, that'd be boring.
If it does fall, the NASDAQ would probably fall the most. Yeah. But yeah. You know I'm looking for 114 on BlackBerry.
On BlackBerry.
Yeah.
I know. So that's a pretty good shot.
I think it's going to be BlackBerry, Dan.
Okay. I'm fine with that. I absolutely fine with that.
I mean, George has gone huge. He's going bigger. He's going home here, right? So we have to have something that has potential to at least maybe trigger some margin calls if the market crashes.
The long VIX. That was my second pick.
I'd short the VIX. I'd keep losing money on it. do you want a trailing stop?
Man, like I said, I don't get to bet often without consequences. So,
there's consequences.
Low stakes, not monetary consequences.
Fair enough.
Yeah, like the craft dinner one probably would have made me rethink it a little bit, but
I knew we should have gone with it. I just don't know that I have enough friends to make that entertaining if we lost.
Right.
It's like, oh, I lost. I'm eating craft dinner by myself again.
Oh,
no.
Oh, yeah, this is sad.
I think I just lost twice.
All right, I like it. So you could choose a trailing stop, yeah, like a percentage, I guess, or how do you guys trail them?
That's how we've been doing it. I think we started introducing like actual levels.
Percentage or like a dollar amount?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I just tell you when I would get out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm all in right now, 21.85. Boys, this is the low of this ETF, like all-time low. So,
yeah.
Woo!
Buy low, sell high.
Yeah, bought the dip, finally.
So you have no idea where to pick a low, because you've got nothing to guide you.
It's all a low. Like, yeah. This is just... Forget SPXS, it should just be LOW. Is there a stock called low?
So, wait, if...
Yeah, lows.
If a stock's at an all-time low, does that mean that nobody has made money who's bought that stock ever in the history of that stock?
Kind of. You know, these ETFs... Yeah, we just all lose. yeah, you know, like these ETFs that track inverse things, they're actually futures based. So there is
there's
a phenomenon in it that if the futures market went nowhere, the SPXS will still drop. Like because you got to roll the contracts forward. There's
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's kind of, so if I win, it's like an extra win for me. That's why I went big.
I like it.
Scaled in. I want to add more at 21.85. Is there time?
Yeah. Oh, all right. All right. Oh, I think that'll wrap everything up with Kyle. You got anything else to?
I think so. Do we get a song? I don't think we even got to hear a song.
Well, okay. Well, we'll play this. We'll play George out with the song.
All right. Let's do that. All right.
So excited.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us. We hope you had a good time. We hope you learned a thing or two. As always, thank you, George. You are a gentleman and a scholar, and we love having you here in the shop. And we'll be coming back at you soon. Until next time, happy trades.
Bye, folks.
Bye. Thank you guys for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Oh, thanks for joining us. Yeah.
Grab all the teddies in the place with style and grace, allowing to beat these simpleton douches in their potions. Who smacks ass can makes cash with all the mammies. The back of the club, fighting lines is where you'll find him. The back of the club, tracking flows is crews behind him. Mad questions asking, no passing, market blasting. But he just can't quit because one of these fuckies poppies got to teach with. Short with, keep the porter secret. Why not? Why blow up my stock? Because the price got dropped. Now check it. He got more ass than buyers at the bid. Believe me, sweetie, he teach enough to feed the needy. No need to be greedy. He got mad friends with Benzes. C-notes by the layers. True fucking traders. Jump in the chat room and come ask him. Tell your friends. Take a course or three. He at the Pro Academy. The trade bros all just call him George Pop. Throw them charts in the air if you're a risk slayer. The traders are just calling George Papa. Through the friendlies, getting tendies, playing entries like hedgies. The traders are just calling George Papa. You got a phone up in your hands, please don't call for a car. Wow. Cause George has got the profits to take that should buy a Mercedes. Mercedes.
Thanks for joining us. You can find us off air at twobullsinachinashop.com. That's the number 2bullsinachinashop.com. Make sure you check us out. Download us on any streaming network. Blah, 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 blah. You know what to do. Rate, subscribe.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.